Speaking of water, let's see, do we have any fairly intelligent young men? Kyle, you look pretty intelligent. What can you tell me about the Dead Sea? Do you know anything about the Dead Sea? You or Alex? Maybe Alex knows. It's really salty. So if it's one of these hot Arkansas days in July, say it's maybe 105 degrees, is that a place you'd go with your water jug to? Why not? It would make you thirstier, would it not? It would, you're right. But one thing kind of neat about the Dead Sea is it's pretty predictable, isn't it? You can always know it's going to be salty. So let's pick on fresh water for just a little bit. A few weeks ago, we went into the Cave City Cave. And what's neat about that water in there is the clarity of it, the coolness of it. You can see right to the bottom. It's good water. The city of Cave City used to get their drinking water out of there. And that water, too, is predictable. You can know that that water is going to be fresh when you go down there. It's not one thing, and then it's not salty. It don't flip-flop back and forth. So the title of the message this morning is Sweet Water and Bitter, taken out of James 3. You can turn there if you want to. This message came about through a need in my own life, really, and also a conversation I eavesdropped on that I'll tell you about later. James 3, let's just break in at verse 6, and we'll read through verse 12. James 3, 6. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beast, and of birds, and of serpents, and of things in the sea, is tamed and has been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessings and cursings. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a vine figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. Double-tongued. What does that mean? You know, the Bible only mentions double-tongued once that I'm aware of. And he's speaking specifically to deacons when he uses that word. So maybe I need to be really careful here, right? Double-tongued. Does it mean we literally have two tongues? Not really, although there's people that have been born that way. But we're not talking about people that actually have two tongues. We're talking about people who say one thing to one person, turn around and say something to another person, or say they are one way and they turn around and live their life another way. That's who I'm talking to this morning. And sometimes, unfortunately, that person's me. It really is. So I told you I'd tell you a story of when I eavesdropped. I walked into a little joint the other day for a sandwich, and for some reason they put me on a table right next to where two ladies were visiting. I don't know why they put me there, but they did. And I was alone. I simply could not help but overhear their conversation. So I did eavesdrop, but I didn't do it on purpose. So what are you supposed to do? Sit there and eat your sandwich with your fingers in your ears? You just can't help but hear. And, you know, it was honestly kind of interesting. They were discussing biblical things. And I actually kind of enjoyed the first part of it. They were talking about God. They were talking about some struggles they had worked through. And, yeah, they were pretty much, it was it was interesting to see what God was doing in their lives according to what they were saying. And about that time, one of the ladies' phones rang. And she answered it, and she was quiet for a little bit. And then she burst out in a tirade against the person on the other line. And she gave them, told them exactly how she had told them to be taken off the call list. And she wants to be taken off immediately. And she gave a pretty hefty chewing out and slammed the phone down on the table. And then she started talking about God again and what God's been doing in her life. And it caught me a little bit. Wow. It took me for a shock. And I know what it's like to be caught by a telemarketer and you don't really want to talk to them. I know what that's like. But maybe we need to at least be sweet about it when we're caught like that. You could at least hang up without saying anything, right? Or at the very least, you could maybe say something positive for that person. Anyway, the conversation continued, and then the other lady started talking about her ex-husband or boyfriend. And you talk about the conversation really going downhill. I don't know why she said some of the things she did. I took it she was spewing them out of frustration, and she didn't act like she cared who heard what she said. Pretty much anybody in the little restaurant could hear what she was saying if they wanted to. But it was not a godly tirade that came out of her mouth. It did not match up with her former speakings of things of the Bible. It didn't match up at all. She obviously very much hated this man she was talking about. She turned out to be a black fountain of bitter water, in my opinion. I was kind of actually happy to hit the door. But you know what? It made me think on the way home. It really made me think. And I got home and I was telling my wife a little bit about some of this stuff. And my wife was the one that brought up this verse of sweet water and bitter. How is it in my life? And I thought about that on the way home. Do I sometimes, am I this faulty fountain that nobody knows what's going to come out? Can I be accused of the same thing? Do I sometimes look pretty good on a Sunday morning and yet something less than godly spews out when somebody bumps me wrong? Is that me? James was talking about the tongue here, and he called it full of deadly poison. Going back to verse 9, he says, "We bless God and we curse men who are made after the similitude of God." He's getting pretty hard on us here. How can we bless God and turn around and talk evil about the pinnacle of God's creation? How can we as men do that? And then he goes on to say these things ought not so to be. He's acknowledging that unfortunately sometimes we humans are caught like this. Sometimes that's the way we are. It's something we need to work on. Something we need to be aware of. It's a shameful thing. Something we should try to get out of our system is what he's saying. And then verse 11, he brings up the sweet water and bitter. You know, we wouldn't be very happy if we went to the kitchen for a cup of cold water on a hot day and we just never knew what was going to come out. We wouldn't like that, would we? We'd say we're going to fix it. We'd say we're going to get Burton over here to figure out what the problem is. We wouldn't put up with it. Nobody wants a bitter, salty surprise on any day. But if using that as a metaphor, if I find that in my own life, am I just as desperate to work that out of my system as I would be out of my house's plumbing? How am I? Am I just as, or is it kind of fun to be the bitter fountain every now and then? How do I find it? How do you find it? Verse 12, "Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a vine figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh." You know, we're not so dumb as to go to a pear tree for apples or an orange tree for bananas. We know better than that, don't we? We can tell that's not what it is when we walk up to it. Unfortunately, we're not. I'm not always that predictable myself. I'm not. Apparently, I still have some rotten, salty water at my core. So how do we work it out? I think he's trying to tell us here. I think he's teaching us here in James to be aware of our human nature and work on it. We're not going to be perfect at it, but we can work on it, can't we? So how do we do it? Do you ever think about that? How do we practice on controlling our tongue? Is it even possible? Why not just sit around like the wise old owl and never say a word? I'd probably be better off, actually, if I did, but that's not really practical. Wouldn't it be kind of awkward after church to just all stand around and look at each other and nobody say anything? You know, we have to communicate after a while. But how do we communicate and keep our tongue in order? We're created to communicate, but how do we do it without being a bitter fountain? And I think the answer is in Luke. And I think Aaron gave this as a verse for next Sunday. Luke chapter 6. Jesus was talking about this very thing. Luke 6:43 through verse 45. For a good tree bringeth not forth corrupt fruit, neither doth a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit, but every tree is known by his own fruit. For of the thorns men do not gather figs, nor of a bramble bush gather they grapes. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For out of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. I think that's our answer, is it not? James used the same analogy as Jesus did here of the good tree and the bad fruit, the good tree and the good fruit, and vice versa. And Jesus says, if we look at the tree, we know what fruit to expect, no surprise. And the same way with a good man, we expect good to come out of a Christian. We expect, with God's help, we expect good to come out. And an evil man, we don't necessarily expect the good to come out. I kind of doubt Adolf Hitler and Stalin walked around singing Jesus first, yourself last, and others in between. Nobody expected them to sing that song. I kind of doubt that was in their hymn book. You know what I mean? You didn't expect it from people like that, but it is expected out of a Christian. And I think all of us here this morning would consider ourselves Christians. Out of the abundance of his heart, the mouth speaks. And if we can get that right in our lives, we don't have to worry so much about what comes out of our mouth or our fountain, if you will. Because it will show up. It will show up. The heart does show who we are. If we can't get the love of Jesus at the core of our heart, we're going to be an unpredictable fountain that people don't know what to expect out of us. And I don't want to be that person. And I don't think anybody in here wants to be that person. And yet sometimes I embarrass myself with what comes out of my mouth. Sometimes I get to humble myself and go make my wrongs right. We all do, don't we? Just because we one time or every now and then blurt out things we shouldn't don't mean that we're not a Christian. But it does mean we maybe have something we need to work on. Maybe I have something I need to work on. And let's be willing to go make it right, even if it is humbling. Think about this. If I'm willing to speak evil of someone, it's actually more of a reflection of me than it is on the person you're speaking about. So next time I'm tempted to think or talk less than ideally about somebody, that needs to come to my mind. It's actually more of a reflection of me than it is of the other person. And I know we live in a world full of people, and we need to talk. We need to talk sometimes to people. We need to visit. We need to make things right. But if we can rarely say anything complimentary about anybody, we need to check our lives, friends. We need to check our lives. Proverbs 18:21 says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof." The next, and then Psalm 62:4 says, "They only consult to cast him down from his excellency. They delight in lies, they bless with their mouth, but they curse inwardly." So moving on to the next section here. And I don't want to take James out of context here. He was literally speaking about words, I believe. But just something else to be aware of. And I mentioned it before. Sometimes our mouth will say one thing, but our lifestyle will say another. So let's think about this for just a little bit. There's a fancy word out there for it called hypocrite. Hypocrite. We like to throw that word around sometime when, yeah, he's a hypocrite or she's a hypocrite. Sometimes we're the hypocrite. Jesus didn't have very flattering terms for these people at all. People that were willing to try and look good, but they did it for the wrong reasons or for personal gain. And I couldn't help but think about Acts 5. We won't read that story. It's a sad story that we all know. Ananias and Sapphira. And so, we'll just recap that story a little bit. The church at that time was in a very giving mood. Barnabas was his name, had just sold some land, and it seemed like he made pretty decent profit on it, and he took it and he gave it all to the church. Pretty impressive. It showed an unselfish man, and probably he got some applause for it. Probably he was whispered about through the faith community about his generosity, which is probably why it's a good idea to give anonymously, but anyway, be that as it may, people found out about it. And poor Ananias and Sapphira wanted some of that praise. They seen that and they liked it. They wanted some for themselves, and they had some land, so why not cut the deal? Why not sell the land and take part of it and pretend we gave all of it? Who's going to know? Can you imagine them looking at each other and saying, "If you keep your mouth shut about it, I'll keep my mouth shut"? Who's going to know? It wasn't that giving part of the profit was wrong for them. That wasn't wrong. In fact, Peter said so in Acts 5, verse 4. He said it was theirs to keep. They could have kept it. If they could have kept all of it, they could have gave part of it. They could have gave 1% away, or they could have gave 99%, whatever they decided they wanted to do. But it was the lie and the hypocrisy that God hated. It was the fact that they were trying to pretend that they were giving everything they could, the whole profit, the whole thing. And they agreed to do this. They lied to do it. They were trying to make it look like they were doing the right thing, and really they were keeping some of it. That's where they went wrong. That's where they went wrong. It was the lie. It was the hypocrisy and the want, the need for praise. Look what we're doing here. Look how generous we are. If they would have just went in there and said, "You know what, we sold some land, we sold it for $10,000, and here's $5,000 of it. We don't feel quite led to give the whole thing right now. We have other stuff we're wanting to do, but here's half of it." No problem, right? But when they pretended to give 10, and really they only gave half, that's where the problem was. God hates hypocrisy. And he literally killed Ananias and Sapphira for it. I can't wonder at that story sometime. Was that not a little bit harsh? Wasn't that just a little bit harsh judgment? But you know what? That's what God did. And you know what? That's a story we still talk about today. It made an impression. It made an impression on us today, and it made an impression, I'm sure, on the church back then. God hates when we say we're one way and we live our lives another way. And our human nature is constantly my human nature is constantly at odds with trying to, I'm a naturally selfish person. I think we all probably are since from the time we're born. It's kind of nice, isn't it? Even though, what is it about exciting about pulling others down to make yourself look good? I don't know, but it's a core human problem I think most of us would have. Even though we know it's not the Christian way. Even though we know. And I'm not saying we walk around downing ourselves. We don't walk around telling everybody we're a worm, and trying to be dirt under everybody's feet. That's not the point. But are we just as willing to lift up our brother or sister as we are to lift up ourselves? You know, it's pretty refreshing to be around people that actually, truly, honestly love you. That's pretty refreshing. People that you know you can trust. Trust is a big thing. Somebody you know you can trust, you know that they love you. We kind of like to be around those people. So what am I doing to be willing to be that person that's trusted? What am I doing to be willing to be that person that loves at all costs? And there's people in the Bible that we preach about, we talk about. You think about the Daniels and the Josephs and the Moses and the Noahs and the, you know, these were humans. They had their desires. They had their flesh to deal with, just like I sometimes look at those people as, well, they were, that was Noah. He could do that because he was so close to God. Well, he was, but he was also a human. You can't tell me building an ark all by yourself with the whole world staring at you laughing about how foolish you are is the easy thing to go through. And I like to think, well, he was Noah, he could do it. No, he was a human. He was a human just like me and you. But he was a man that he was principled, was he not? I think that's what attracted his family to him. He was solid. When he said he was going to do something, that's who that man was. If he said he was going to be somewhere at a certain time, that's what he was going to do. He was a strong man. He knew where he stood, and he wasn't shy about letting the people around him know where he stood. This is who I am. He didn't hide his candle under a bushel. And how is it for you and me? Am I a consistent enough person that when people bump into me on any given day, they don't get whiplash about what comes out of my mouth? You know? Am I just as consistent on a good day or as I am on a bad day? How is it? Is my Monday morning mood entirely dependent on how good of a weekend I had? If I had a bad weekend, everybody back off a little bit. I don't think that's anybody here. I'm not preaching to anybody here. I'm just saying there are those people out there, and sometimes it's me. 3 verses out of Proverbs. Proverbs talks a lot about the tongue, actually. Proverbs 12, 17, 18, 19. He that speaketh truth showeth forth righteousness. That's the first part of that verse. The next one is, there is that speaking like the piercing of a sword, but the tongue of the wise is health. The lips of the truth shall be established forever, but a lying tongue for a moment. Are we, my challenge to myself and y'all this morning is be consistent and be a consistent fountain that spews forth truth, that spews forth good things. Speak life. We're going to speak anyway, so let's speak things that lift up to the best of our abilities. Proverbs 30:32, if thou hast done foolishly in lifting up thyself, or if thou hast thought evil, lay thy hand upon thy mouth. That's pretty easy to understand, isn't it? If we know we have this tendency, lay your hand upon your mouth. Stop it at the source. Don't let your ears hear your own negative thoughts, much less let somebody else hear them. David said in Psalms 141:3, set a watch, O Lord, before I may my mouth, and keep the door of my lips. And just the other day, we were down here, me and my oldest boy coming back from in Bowdoin, and we got caught in that, I guess the truck turned over there in Jessup or something. And we were out talking to some of the people in the lineup there. And he was out with me, and I guess there was a man and a woman in a car. And the man stepped out. I don't know if he didn't see my boy or what, but he spewed out some words I sure wouldn't say up here. And his wife laid into him. Don't talk like that. There's a child here. She was probably just as wrong lashing out at him in the way she did as he was in spilling out what he did. But if both of them, if we never, if that's not an issue of ours, praise the Lord. But if both of these people would have never had a tendency to speak like this, if they would have, if this wasn't a part of their everyday vocabulary, he probably didn't even think about what he said. And there's people out there like that. They're so used to speaking like this, they don't, it's just who they are, and that's what spills out when they bump in, when people bump into them. My point is, if that's us, we can stop it. And we don't even have to take it as far as they did in other little things. Set a watch upon your lips. George Eliot put a quote out there. He said, blessed, actually I think George Eliot was a pen name. I think it was a lady that wrote this. Blessed is the man who, having nothing to say, abstains from giving worthy evidence of the fact. You know, if we don't have anything to say, we're probably better off keeping our mouth shut. Probably are. But we're human, and the devil likes to stick his fingers in there and mess it up, don't he? But with God's help and the help of our fellow men, we can achieve, work at achieving this goal, can't we? With God's help, we can. I didn't share this message because I think we have a problem of foul language in this church or anything like that. But it brought an awareness to me that what I store in my heart does actually matter. And the community around us, y'all, all of us together, we bump into each other. We know our personalities. We know our tendencies. And what is your life? What is my life showing? Am I the disgruntled, hardly anything ever goes right, or are we the, with God's help, we're going to make it? Which type of people are we? Just a challenge I'd like to leave with y'all for this week. Thanks for listening. Let's kneel for prayer.